Attention all you rule breakers, you misfits and troublemakers, all you free spirits and pioneers, all you visionaries and nonconformists. Everything the establishment has told you is wrong with you is actually what's right with you. You see things others don't. You are hardwired to change the world.
Okay, we're going to be introducing Michael DiMartino, interfaith minister, producer. Permaculture designer. I'm sorry, I can't remember all that, but I just think I know you too much as my friend, you know? And
these are just the hats we're wearing today.
Yeah, the hats we're wearing today. So Michael, you know, I've been trying to keep up with you, but just trying to keep up with you mentally is exhausting. You know, you do a lot, man. You're out there really rustling the bushes, you know? So, but I think today we're going to talk about the water protector thing that you're doing right now. You know, how did you first get involved in this?
Well, it's really interesting. As you know, we've both been involved in media, and of course, you at Lotus Guide Magazine, and congratulations on the new Lotus Guide Center. And I've been doing down in Nevada County Golden Road TV, radio. And over the last 4.5 years traveling throughout the region, which we've now quantified as the Sacramento River watershed, just kind of showcasing people that are doing good work in our region around sustainability, around health. I mean, just such a great area to live in. And about a year ago, I did a series of public forums here at the Chico Women's Club, up at the Parks and Rec building at the Mount Shasta City Park, at the Digital Media Center in Nevada County, and a few other locations up in Truckee, and doing these public forums around community resilience, which means a community's ability to identify issues, create innovative solutions, but also resilience means things like food and water security, emergency preparedness, and of course here, paradoxically enough, in paradise, it means an ability for a community to come back to be resilient and flexible to help recreate itself after various things, whether it's wildfire, disaster, or sea level rise, or a hurricane like we've just had in the Bahamas. So after doing that, I really realized that on spring equinox about a year ago, as I was at the headwaters of the Sacramento River, that I was literally asked by the headwaters and the spirits of that place and the river to really focus my skill set and attention specifically on the water issue. So thus this concept of water protector tour was born.
Yeah, we could do a whole show on just water and the consciousness around water. I think as we evolve consciously, we're going to be able to communicate with water more and more and more, you know, like Dr. Modo did some great research. We know now, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that words and intentions affect water. And water could be holding the consciousness of this planet. And here we are destroying it in so many ways, running it through right-angle pipes. Everything takes its toll. I just heard today that when you drink water, you should run it into a container and let it sit for a day. Because as it comes through all the pipes, if you let it sit, it'll revitalize a little bit. Because every right angle turn takes away from it.
Yeah. And also off-gassing for whatever is in it, whether it's chlorination from water processing or other nefarious elements that have made itself into our water. I would like to say that water protection, water protector, being a water protector is not something I uniquely have come up with. It's something that really indigenous communities have been on the forefront for thousands of years successfully doing, much before the invasion of colonial culture and colonial mindset and rampant capitalism.
You mean when we discovered the Native American
Indian? Yes, exactly. Exactly. And it was amazing because today I was with the Mountain Maidu up on Lake Almanor at a place called Humbug Valley. And recently, PG&E just gave them back 2,400 acres of their ancestral homeland for land stewardship. So it was a pretty legendary day, and I think just another one of the dominoes falling in this incredible paradigm shift and change that we're seeing right now all over the world. And also, it's this whole week has been the climate change rallies all over the world. I mean, today kids all over the world left school and led protests about they don't want to inherit a broken, toxic, exploited, and over-extractive planet.
Yeah, I know when I talk to a millennial and really get into their mindset, I can understand why they would want to just disappear from it all, get on their iPhones, and do whatever it is they do. But I tell you, the millennials that are waking up are going, oh my God, you know, all the things, not only from the past that we've destroyed, but we're destroying their future too. Right. You know, we're actually destroying it. We're burning it up down in the forest. You know, I know you're like me a little bit. When I look around at all of the things to look at and tackle and see what's up with it, like 5G coming out, it's coming out being deployed, which is a military word. Right. You know, I did a whole radio show on just 5G, and the FCC director said that there hasn't been one penny spent on research, and they're going to deploy it no matter what. Then you look at everything else that's happening with subjects that people don't like to think about or talk about, like pedophilia. I mean, there's so much being uncovered right now. And I think it's being uncovered because the time has come when we really take it to heart that secrecy is repugnant, as Kennedy once said. We cannot live in a society where everything is so secret, because that's where they have all their power. Once you pull back the curtain, they lose a lot of that power. So what I'm curious about, like, I have a hard time figuring out what to write about. There's so many things to write about. What is it about the water that really grabbed you?
Well, what's interesting, and just to go back for a moment, again, I want to acknowledge the indigenous nations that have been water protectors. I know that the term water protector really came into light during the standoff at Standing Rock, where Native people were protecting their culture and their water from the Dakota Access Pipeline. So even though there is a spiritual alignment and support for Indigenous people's rights to land and water, we're not trying to co-opt the water. Because some people say, well, what does this have to do with Standing Rock? So there is a connection. We do have a gentleman who's involved in what we're doing who was part of Standing Rock. But the whole Water Protector Tour is primarily, at this point, Water Protector Tour 2020 is based in the Sacramento River watershed, which is about a dozen counties going from Mount Shasta all the way down through Central Valley to Sacramento, and also out to really the Bay, Suisun Bay, and into the Bay of San Francisco. So what we're doing is really identifying a region, which is a watershed. If you don't know what a watershed is, it's basically when a drop of rain falls, wherever that rain falls and wherever it ends up into creek, stream, river, into inevitably into the ocean, if a river is lucky enough to have that kind of longevity, how that whole area is interconnected. So we're not looking at towns or cities or even counties per se. We're looking at an entire region of how we are completely interdependent and interrelated to this watershed, and of course, water is life. So I do want to acknowledge with full respect the Native communities who have been water protectors for a long time. And what we're doing is it's a little bit of a different angle, including the Indigenous perspective, of course, but we're also bringing in individuals, whether they're water scientists or educators. We're bringing in various nonprofit organizations that have been working around water issues for a long time. We're also reaching out to land trusts and also policymakers. One of the events we have coming up, we invited Louis Elbinger to come and speak, who ran for Congress with the Green Party, and another gentleman, Austin Bennett, who ran the senatorial race just a while back. We have the mayor of Nevada City coming. I've been in communication with the mayor of Mount Shasta, and we've also invited members from Board of Supervisors. So it's really, this Water Protector Tour is about building bridges between the Native communities and their issues, along with citizens who are affected by water safety and security, nonprofit organizations, and also policymakers, decision makers, to come together, and like you said, to try to identify the issues in our region, and even more importantly, because there's plenty of complaining in the world and issues to deal with, is trying to provide some very feasible solutions.
You know, I can almost hear the questions coming right now. And one of the questions would be, the Native Americans did do a good job at protecting the water, but when they were doing that, there was a lot less people. Right now, there's 15 times more people than there were for centuries. We were stable at 500 million people for a long time. So right now, we have going on 8 billion people on this planet. California is so packed with people and pollution. I mean, how can you address that without factoring in the population? And how do we address that as it keeps on growing? And it's not stopping.
That's a great point. So part of it is with this concept of resilience is we have to look at things in the moment and be flexible and able to innovate. Like people in the Bahamas knew about climate change. They knew about sea level rise. And right now they're being flooded. So they have to, in the moment, deal with the issues at hand. For them, it might be just getting actual food and water. So for the issue of population, and again, to rewind for a second, about what you were talking about. In 1992, I was part of the Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, where it was actually the signing of governments of the world around Agenda 21. And a big part of this Agenda 21 is kind of related to a depopulation agenda, because the Earth does have finite resources, and there's a lot of implications. I don't think we have time to talk about that right now, but how do we kind of bring things into a state of balance? The Hopi say, Koyaanisqatsi, the world is upside down, the world is out of balance. So how do we bring back this balance? And I think what we have to do is we have to look at the reality of what's happening now. We have to look at where we've come from and the successes, again, of indigenous people. And that's kind of the slogan I use for my TV show, Golden Road, is, well, what's the Golden Road? Well, the road is that we're all traveling to a commonality, and we have to bridge the past with today for a better tomorrow. So part of dealing with these issues, part of it could be looking at technologies that either exist or that can be implemented. So there's a whole level of technology and innovation, and we have to look at the current age. I mean, in the time of before colonialism here in North America, we didn't have issues like from the gold rush, where a lot of our area has been contaminated by mercury and other things from the legacy of the gold rush, which is part of a colonial history, but also a indigenous genocide. So we really have to look at all the elements in this moment and try to create innovative solutions. I do want to say recently, Governor Gavin Newsom actually issued an apology on behalf of California to Native people for the genocide that did occur. And I think that's a huge step. So like you said, we're peeling back the curtain, which means we have to lift up the rug, get all the stuff out from under the rug that we've been avoiding and not looking at. And we have to begin honest dialogue, working with the indigenous people. I always try to have a reconciliatory tone and of course, great respect as someone whose family's immigrated here. But also part of that is knowing through media and technologies and other skill sets that I have the privilege of, have to bring that to a round table to help create these round table solutions and create these think tanks to start looking at some of these issues. I do want to emphasize nothing we're doing is overly politically charged. This isn't about left or right, or are you a liberal or a conservative or red or blue, or are you a hippie or are you a redneck? Like, none of those are terminologies that we're trying to fall victim to. We're actually coming at this from the health and human approach of the health of ourselves, our community, and our children.
Yeah, in fact, if politics would enter into this, then you're getting into all this crazy debating, and it's absolutely programmed to go nowhere. But conversations, even like the one we're having right now, there was a philosopher named Hegel, and he said that the best options, the best solutions, comes from two people or two groups of people coming together in dialogue that absolutely disagree with each other, but are willing to let down their guard and find that medium ground. And in that medium ground comes all of your solutions. Because I think if people could get together that are really, really opposing each other, come together in a loving kind of a way, that would create a higher consciousness. And then that gets into the realm of what Einstein said. We're never going to come up with the solutions from the same level that created the problems. We have to expand our consciousness. We have to evolve. And one of the ways is, and this is the thing about what you're doing, you're pulling these people together. And I know it must be difficult sometimes. People have different agendas and different ideas, but to pull them together and synthesize that to where you can come up with a solution. And I know you and I, we've talked before about some really far out things. And in that conversation comes ideas that neither you nor I have ever thought about before. And I think this is the important part about where our world is now. We're so polarized right now. And everybody is so embedded and crystallized in their thoughts and in their worldview and in their beliefs that to come together is such a threat with somebody that disagrees with you. Like Antifa, I mean, anti-fascist. They don't even see that what they're doing is fascism. That's the exact thing of fascism, is getting together and just beating people over the head that you disagree with or disagree with you, you know?
And sometimes, as you know, it takes a tragedy. We just memorialized 9/11, when not only did the country, but the world seemed to be coming together more. Sometimes it takes disasters. It takes unfortunate incidents for people to get out of their comfort zone and their apathy to start thinking outside the box. And like you speak so eloquently about, we might not know what it looks like. Again, it's like the caterpillar goes in the cocoon. The imaginal cells recreate and it comes out something new. So I have yet to see any one person who has all the answers. But as you understand, in the collective consciousness, there are people, whether they are scientists, they come from an indigenous perspective, they're an environmentalist or a policymaker, they all have an important part of this holistic picture. And I know Lotus Guide is extremely dedicated to holistic health, looking all spirit, mind, and body alternatives, where we have to start looking at things holistically and not myopically, where we're just tunnel vision about what we know and that's the way it is. But how do these pieces fit together into a bigger puzzle?
Well, you couldn't have picked a better solution or problem to look at. I mean, water is sort of a connector to a lot of the things, food and air and land and everything that we're having so many problems with. Somebody told me here a while back, she's an almond grower here in Chico, and she said the growers down in the Central Valley, they have to mix water with their water because their water has such a saline consistency to it that it would not be good. You know, they have to mix fresh water with it. So even if they had a lot of water, which is a problem now, they don't have a lot of water. Even they're running out of water, and, you know, one out of five people, that's where they get their food, all over the United States. It comes from California.
Well, it's interestingly, we're on the tinge of politics, and I don't want to delve too deep into that, but you're exactly right. Part of when we talk about these issues, we have to look at the solutions. And I do want to leave a little time to talk about some of the big issues and solutions. But in the science of permaculture, we've come to understand the difference about flooding irrigation as opposed to drip irrigation. So particularly around almonds, right, which is actually not just an agricultural industry, but actually there's agricultural corporatocracies in California that run multi-billion dollar organizations dealing with agriculture. But the point is if we look at it, there's new ways of thinking, there's new technology, there's ancient technology being rediscovered of how we can do things in a much more holistic way. For instance, one of the issues we're focused on, the other day I spent an afternoon with Barbara Daly from North Delta Cares, a boat captain and a few other people, an attorney on the Delta, and we traveled around looking at the Sacramento River Delta, 1,000 miles of waterways, 60 islands, and absolutely a cornerstone of California's water and agricultural security. And what was interesting to me is on this trip, we started to talk about, well, the idea of putting in these tunnels to basically transport the majority of water down through the San Joaquin Valley, it's not just about agriculture, okay, which there's solutions within agriculture about other types of farming, but it's also about development. And it's about the lack of housing in California, but it's about huge real estate developers needing the water to develop projects that benefit their pocketbook and using a little bit of greenwashing and verbiage to state it in a way where it appears like it's green, it's environmentally friendly, this is the humanitarian solution, this is a problem, this is what we have to do. The unfortunate thing is there's people at the top of that economic pyramid who are making all the financial benefit, exploiting resources, and using it really for their own benefit. So the Delta Tunnels project is just one of several things we're looking at. It tends to be a more of a powder keg of discussion than talking about environmental toxins, you know, things that we use in our own life and things that we do that are affecting our quality of water. It's not quite as explosive as some of the other things that are happening, like right now up in Mount Shasta in the city of Weed. The city of Weed lost their water rights to Crystal Geyser, who now is building a plastic water bottling plant to crank out a 500 million bottles of water a day in boutique waters, the majority which will not benefit the local citizens and will not, probably not stay here in the United States, will be going over to other countries like Asia. And I don't say that with any sort of anti-Asian sentiment. I'm just saying that these are our natural resources. And as Louis Elbinger said, in the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights, we are all have the right to clean air and water. This isn't a privilege, this is a right. So the almond orchards are a big part of California's economy. The problem is a lot of these farms are subsidized. And what happened, they started subsidizing them during the Depression because we needed food for our citizens in the United States. Now a lot of these subsidies are going to subsidize them where the majority of these things are also going out of country and being exported and are taxing our natural resources. And even these resources are being rebrokered and resold by the top 3% of the 1%, the multiple billionaires. And I'm not gonna say any names because I'm not trying to be adversarial here, but I'm just trying to wake up people to follow the money trail and find out who the players are and see what's happening and take back your human rights.
Yeah, we touched on a few things there. We could go off topic here, so I'll try to stay on topic because we're talking
about...
You
want the names, I know.
Yeah, I want the names.
Well, I will say this, okay? With no accusations right now, the Resnick family, I think they're currently worth over $4 billion, own the majority of almond orchards, especially south of Sacramento. They are definitely the people who are power brokering a lot of the water resources of our region to keep agriculture going using very archaic practices. And then as we find out, if there's overabundance or if they have more inventory than they use, they're actually reselling the water and once again turning a profit. And all this is being subsidized by taxpayers going back to the Great Depression when we subsidized farmers. Now, we're not talking about small farms. We're talking about multi-billionaires who are running agricultural corporatocracies. The other dirty player is Bechtel, who is a huge land developer, and they absolutely have their hand and feet and pocketbooks and bank accounts heavily invested in our water resources. So don't believe me. Don't believe anything I say. Do the research. Follow the money trail. Do your due diligence and do your own investigation. But these are people who are affecting potentially our health and generations of people to come here in Northern California. We enjoy a certain quality of life and we tend to have a certain reverence to the natural world.
Yeah, just reminding everybody to do their own due diligence is so important, because I've noticed a lot of people ask me to explain things to them in detail. I say, well, no, here is the surface of it. You go out and do your own research. There's a energizing thing that happens when you uncover something and you start figuring it out. It's like eating food or something. You know, I could sit here and show everybody pictures of food, but it wouldn't do them any good. The best thing is to use the pictures as an idea of where to go get real food and eat it. And this is real energy. When you actually start doing the research, going out and taking action. But unfortunately, so many people, and this is going to bite us in the ass if we're not careful. We have this tendency to react instead of taking action. But some of these problems, we can't wait to react. If we wait to react like AI, if we wait to react to AI, it's going to be too late. If we wait to react to the water problem, it's going to be too late.
Well, like my friend said from Standing Rock, he said, we're indigenous people. We were given land, a small token of the land we once held. We were given land, and now they're putting oil pipelines through there. We don't even have the right to our own land, to our own resources. And what happened? They got water hosed. They got rubber bulleted. They got oppressed. The pipeline went in, and what's happened? Several oil spills since then, which is, of course, is not only contaminating the surface water, but anyone who understands hydrology, it's getting into the groundwater. And it's not only a cultural, but it's a biological genocide of the people there.
Yeah, we did one issue with the whole thing was Standing Rock right on the cover. And the article I wrote, I said, I'm not a prophet. I can't see the future, but I can tell you right now, it's going to happen. It always happens. These pipelines leak. This is not a rocket science. You know, it's going to happen. And they were just promising that they won't leak and everything. But so many things that like this, it's easy to predict because the predictor is the history.
There's a liquefied natural gas pipeline that just went along the state line on the Oregon-California border, because Oregon didn't want it, California didn't want it. So what they do, they put it in. There's all the processed coal that's being put in storage areas. I'm not talking facilities. I'm talking parking lots along East Bay. There was a whole thing about, you know, Trump, make America great. We need to get the coal industry going. The coal industry is a dead industry, not even considering the reality of climate change. It's a dead industry. So in our quest for energy independence and make America great and to help our economy, all this processed coal is now being exported to the East Bay. At first, California resisted, and then our current President Trump said, well, we'll put it in military bases. We have right to those federal lands. Oakland kicked it out, and now they're looking in areas like Vallejo and Benicia, putting these huge parking lots filled with processed coal, literally surrounded by yellow tape, not even in facilities, blowing into low-income and minority communities. And don't take my word for it. Just go to No Coal Vallejo, do the research of what's happening there. So all along our watershed, our Sacramento River, what I call the Nile of the West, right? 180 miles of river, multiple tributaries the absolute blood of California's life and agriculture is under threat, and it's not stuff we're going to become aware of by looking on the front page of corporate media.
No, there's so many things happening right now. I mean, the next issue I'm touching on homelessness. We're actually bringing somebody here, Garrison Keeler, I think his name is. He's doing a benefit for the homeless, you know, to put tiny houses in. And it's been working out pretty good. For like in Michigan, they're doing it. They have lots there that are selling so cheap, you know, like $1,000 an acre. An acre, you can put it on four tiny houses, and they're getting people together, and they have like their own little community there. I think we're entering into an area where we really have to think differently. I mean, thinking out of the box, for sure, but we have to even go further than that. And I like what you're saying and how you're looking at it, because you're trying not to look too far down the road, because if you do it, it's overwhelming. Right. And we are counting on new technology coming out. But to make that happen, we have to survive, and we have to be healthy. And right now, I'm telling you, Michael, we're living in such a, here in paradise, this is like living in a petri dish, you know? Every little thing that happens here, you can see it right away. And there's some health aspects here. They are doing a good job at cleaning it up, though. It's amazing what they're doing. Americans, I'm telling you, we are amazing people when it's put in front of us, the task is clear, and it comes down to, okay, we got to do this. This country is amazing at what we can do, and I'm seeing that happen around in this community right now. There's a lot of infighting, a lot of politics and the bullshit, you know, but when the day is done, every time I look out there, it's a little bit cleaner, you know.
Well, I was amazed. I haven't been up here for a few months, and just the amount of debris removal that's happened. We actually met at the church a few months back, and I accidentally walked into the room where they were talking about the toxic cleanup here and about what was happening with the water and soil contamination. The water from the benzene of all the burnt PVC, the asbestos from the old constructions, the plastics, not only that, but compromised mercury storage containers. So part of our water protector tour, like you said, it is a petri dish. We're showing people like, look at what happens with these natural disasters that are getting more prevalent. Whether you believe in climate change or not, they are becoming more prevalent. And look at the toxic fallout that resulted because we're living in a broken system that somehow has lost its connection to not only the natural world, the natural systems, but at some point, sanity and our somehow the whole value system of what we were taught in school, the his story, you know, going all the way back to natives were savages and the cowboys were the heroes, all the way to current day administration where they're talking about lowering emissions in California is going to build cheaper and safer cars. Like, there's something really upside down about that. So, unfortunately, a lot of times it takes a catastrophe, but what we're talking about with Crystal Geyser, what we're talking about with the Delta Tunnels, two plants pulling 3,000 to 6,000 cubic feet of water a minute out of the Sacramento River Delta and sending it down in the tunnels down through the San Joaquin Valley. How can that not have not only devastating effect on wildlife, but our water resource? So it is, it's really time to change. So part of when we do these programs, they're saying, well, what's the Water Protector Tour about? And at first we were kind of, you know, well, we want to educate people about the issues. We want to innovate and look at new solutions. And if necessarily, we will legislate, like we're looking at some non-toxic resolutions. And just like PG&E endured here, in some situations, you might even have to litigate against people that are not being held accountable for the damage that they're directly responsible for.
Yeah, and this is happening more and more. People are waking up, like Johnson & Johnson just lost a big case. They've been really promoting OxyContin down in all over the place. But in Oklahoma, they took them to court. One, they wanted $17 billion. They only got a half a billion. But, you know, at least that's a beginning. That's a crack in the dam. Now all of the other states that is getting ready to go into litigation can use that as a precedence to take their cases to court. The only thing these people understand is money. If you don't take their money, they don't really care. And this is the big mistake people like you and I and so many of us make. We can't even imagine how could people get up early of a morning. These people get up early and go down to the office, sit around 100,000.
I get up early sometimes, not to you, but...
But what we get up early for is different. They get up early and actually sit around a big mahogany table and plot and scheme, and they have no empathy, no sympathy for their fellow people out here in the real world, you know? And it's hard to wrap our heads around that. You know, oh, they wouldn't do something like that. Well, yes, they would. You know, when it comes to making money, these people will do anything and everything.
Perfect example. Look at, you said, the opioid crisis. Look at Monsanto, and that Roundup was created as a pipe cleaner. They realized it killed weeds. They put it out. They told people it was safe. And now there's been several lawsuits against them saying, well, actually, it's not safe, and it can create Hodgkin's lymphomas and cancer. And there's been several settlements. So I just have to say that people have to wake up and realize that it's time for profit over people to end. And everybody has to take an active part in that. I was going to make a bumper sticker the other day. It was a little severe, but we're in severe times. It was like, wake up, stand up, show up, or just shut up. Right. Because there's so many people who want to just complain and debate. I say that because people have to try to bring solutions now. It's beyond just talking and debating. It's like I saw a picture of climate change cartoon the other day where all the politicians were at a climate change summit debating, and then the boardroom was under, you know, all their heads were underwater, and they're like bubbles coming out of their mouth, and they're debating. Meanwhile, they're getting coastal flooding and submerged in a hurricane. It's just, it's so paradoxical. But... they're playing their part in this great awakening, and they're doing their divine part in this whole drama, really.
So. Yeah, for the first time in the last maybe 2 or 3 years, I'm starting to see that there really is an awakening. There's something stirring. If you're at the conscious level to where you can sort of pay attention to the undertone of news stories and what's happening in the world, you can see a restlessness with people.
Sirens just went by. There's an emergency situation here on planet Earth. And the millennials, the kids are waking up. Today, all over the world, kids skipped school and protested. They blocked streets. They on Monday, they're doing an event to shut down Washington, D.C. So you're right. People are waking up. Maybe you're not a protester. So I want to bring it back to the personal, because people who are watching this, and again, please share this, and I want to commend you for the amazing work that you and Dara are doing with the Lotus Guide Center, with the magazine, with the kind of content that you're bringing to people, like incredible. So a world of respect and praise to you. You're one of my heroes.
Oh, man.
But everybody can be a solutionary by doing simple things. Okay, so some of the issues, we've talked about extractive industries, we've talked about mismanagement, we've talked about other issues, but exploitation. But some of the things I want to kind of just bring home, under this area of water protector, there's things that we can all do. If you're a housewife, just working within the home, when you go to work, things you can do at your job, things you can do in your community. Some of the issues that we're having with water safety and security has to do with environmental toxins. So maybe you use synthetic cosmetic products. A lot of them have aluminum. So not only for your health, and I know we live in an age where not everybody is health conscious. I mean, look at the fast food industry. Look at all the GMOs. Look at the stuff they're rolling out. It's tough. We live in a very busy, confusing, fast-paced society. And some people say, I can't afford organic. But in light of your own health, try to use natural-based cosmetics that don't impact your health and impact the quality of water. Secondly, pesticides. Your landscaping practices absolutely have to change. If you use Roundup or any sort of inorganic pesticides, land care products, if you do flood irrigation, that has to change, because not only is it affecting water and safe water and the amount of water, but it's also affecting, and I want to give a big shout out to Toro Rocha, it's devastating our pollinators. And pollinators are the link between nature and the human food supply. We have seen bee and pollinator die-offs in the millions, and these are basically symptoms of using toxic landscaping and lawn products.
Yeah, okay. It does have an accumulative effect. And I think about this too. I try to be conscious and aware, even when I'm using somebody else's water at the water faucet. I turn it off if I don't need it when I'm washing my hands, and turn it back on to rinse my hands off. All of these little things do add up, you know. It's just difficult when you're looking at the world and the immensity of this problem to relate that to your small little life. But this is where we just all have to have the consciousness and the faith that everybody is going to start doing this. And believe me, for the people out there that Joe and Mabel that have five kids, you know, talking about eating GMO, I know it's tough, boy, when you have a lot of kids and Joe is driving his work truck to work at 6 a.m. doing his construction or whatever, trying to put food on the table. They just want to get the kids full and put them to bed. But what I have found is, one, we eat way too much bulk in this country.
Because of the nutritional deficiency.
Yeah, your body's still wanting nutrition. So you still, that hunger signal. So what we started doing, like years ago, we eat a lot less, but we eat better. And I am never hungry. And I'm telling you, like, we always split a breakfast. We split our dinners when we go out and eat. It's like way too much food for us.
That's why places like Whole Foods and others have become so popular, because people are realizing the value of not only whole food, nutritional in its natural state, but we also realize that our soil is depleted of minerals, so the food isn't as nutritional. I mean, the difference of what a tomato looked and smelled like when I was a child to now, it's night and day.
And how about strawberries? I remember strawberries when I was a kid. Mm. We would go out and pick big buckets of it along the railroad track back in West Virginia. And the whole house would smell strawberries. Now you can, oh yeah, I smell a little bit of it, you know, and you break it open and it's white.
It's the scorpion genes they put in it to keep it from freezing.
Really?
Oh yeah, tomatoes too. You know, everything is genetically modified. They're even crossing. I just found out, because California has no native salmon. That's part of the issue. I just did some media support for Chief Kayleen Sisk of the Winnemem Wintu, who does an annual run for salmon, starting when the salmon show up in the bay and start going upriver, to bring light to of how the salmon environments have been so impacted and actually can't make it back to the glacial headwaters now of Siskiyou County and the Cascades and Klamath Range, because there's so many dams and so many blockages to that. But they've created a genetic salmon. See, and this is the strange thing about the marketing. People are getting smart. How do we appeal to, well, we're going to do climate change ready plants, climate change ready salmons, ones who will be able to adapt for a changing world because of the destruction we've done. And as you know, whether it's nutritionally, and we still don't, the science isn't back yet of what the effect is on our physiology from these genetic things. They have genetically modified salmon that also have human genes in them. So the solution is, the Winnemem just found out in New Zealand There's actually the original species of salmon that inhabited the Sacramento River, so they're in the process of bringing them back over. So again, nature is abundant. Nature has created everything we have, and we can see from this video camera to these chairs to our bodies to water to everything has come from some level, even chemicals, everything has come in from nature. So all of these, and this is what we learn in permaculture, all the answers are within nature. We just have to go back and look at these systems of how they relate to each other. So it's a scary time. It's an exciting time of change. And it's kind of, with humility and honor, it's kind of a blessing to be alive at this time, to be able to help be a bridge and to maybe get us back on track. I couldn't think of a better use of my time and energy.
Yeah, this is probably the most exciting time to be on planet Earth. We've gone through so many changes, and I totally agree with that. And I think we're getting ready for a transition that's going to be challenging, and I use that word mildly because it's going to be really challenging for a lot of people. But looking around, like when we went through this Paradise Fire, I noticed something. The people that had a difficult time, it wasn't the physicalness, it was the lack of emotional readiness. Their emotions were key to handling everything, from escaping the fire to surviving the fire to rebuilding and coming back. And the people that are coming back now, they, and if anybody's listening or watching this, they know what I mean if they live up here. These are true pioneer people that are seeing the positiveness of coming back and recreating this, not creating it how it was, but recreating. The city says probably it's going to cap out at around 8,000 people. That's a nice community. Right. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, this place was pretty crowded up here, and we weren't paying attention to the way we had our shrubs and gardens and front lawns. There was like everybody, you go down to any of these streets, and people would say the same thing. Man, if there's ever a fire here, this is going to be a problem.
Yeah, well, part of this new paradigm is our head and our heart brain, our heart math, our heart intelligence, communicating with our intellectual brain and using our intuition to understand and to implement before it's too late. So I do want to say a couple other quick issues, because I know we're probably getting close to the end, because I really want to leave people with not just information, but something you can practically do. A couple other major issues in our Sacramento River watershed: plastics, microplastics. We absolutely have to start utilizing alternatives to plastics. If you look now, there's dozens of options for plastic straws and plasticware. There's plant cellulose. They're coming out now with oat straws made out of hay. There's so many solutions, and it's really not that much more expensive to use them. And if you look at your kids in the eyes, that little bit of extra will be so worth it, so your kids are not being made sick by the bad decisions that we made with the information we've had in the past, and are using that as our understanding of where we have to go and to bring more solutions. So the microplastics thing is a huge issue. We talked about environmental toxins, also pharmaceutical disposal. They said literally a majority of water that they test now is testing positive for various pharmaceuticals, because everybody does what? They put them down the drain, and those are water soluble. So you have to look into your region and how you need to dispose of any sort of pharmaceutical waste that you're not using. I mean, look at the amount of opioids, look at the depression, look at the schizophrenia, look at the psychological imbalances that are so rampant in society, whether it's through our nutrition, whether it's through the magnetic fields of the planet changing, whether it's through things that are in the water that we're not sure of. But this is just another issue that we can really look at. And then, again, we talked a little bit about privatization and mismanagement. But part of the Water Protector Tour, again, is just to give people really ground floor, simple solutions to issues around health and quality of life.
So real quick, like, what's coming up?
So thanks for asking. I'm not sure when this will broadcast, but today is September 20th. Tomorrow I'll be going back out on the Delta doing more video for a documentary I'm doing to highlight the Delta Tunnels project and its impact. Tomorrow evening we're holding a Water Protector Stakeholder Forum at the Fruit Ridge Community Center in South Sacramento from 5 to 8 p.m. It's open to the public, and we call it Stakeholder Forum because we want people who are doing water-related work, people in media, to come and feel that they're willing to invest some level of energy, effort, and commitment into helping support the Water Protector Tour and to help bring solutions. And then on Sunday, and we didn't know when we organized it, of course this weekend is the United Nations International Day of Peace, it's the Global Climate Change Awareness Week. On Sunday we're doing from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. a Water Protector rally at the State Capitol with various indigenous speakers, various policy makers, people who have run for political office, different water-related organizations, and musicians who will be singing about water because, as you know, art is a big part of how we can inspire people and change consciousness without just science and spoken word. I mean, look at the 60s, a big part of everything that happened with human rights, civil rights, the Back to the Land movement, the health movement. A lot of that was expressed through the music of the time. So it's a great way to do edutainment. Like, we'll entertain you, but we're going to give you something to think about, and hopefully you're going to leave inspired. After that, we're doing 15 months.
And this is starting November 16th?
Our next event is November 16th. We're holding a land trust summit in Grass Valley because land trusts potentially hold the key to solutions. And what I mean is we have an agenda talking about the hundreds of thousands of acres that are in land trusts right now throughout our region. Let's use these as water banks. And what I mean is by doing permaculture practices, simple berms and swales, we can be regenerating our groundwater. Let's reintroduce native pollinator plants back to these habitats that have been encroached upon by other species from other places, and bring back our pollinators. I mean, right now, one of the big thefts that are happening in our area, people are going and stealing the bee boxes that are essential because the pollinators are gone. They bring in, you drive all up and down Highway 7099, you see all the bee boxes, all the almond orchards, all the plants, all the agriculture depends on being pollinated. In China, they do it by hand.
Why are they stealing them?
They're stealing them because they're worth like $500 to $600 per box. So people are stealing them, whether they're reselling them or whatever they're doing. But it's kind of like water is the new oil. Pollinators are the new gold.
Tell you, some of these things, it's hard to wrap my head around. So if somebody wants to see what you're doing, what's your website?
They can go to waterprotectortour.org. And I do want to say I'm a media person. I'm a public relations person. It takes a village. I'm just part of an emerging coalition right now of over 20 organizations that are all getting involved together to share messaging to get stuff done. So starting this weekend, Fall Equinox, 15 months, we're doing over 20 events over 15 months in the 10 or 11 counties along the Sacramento River watershed, which is about an event a month. I just spoke at the Soil Not Oil Conference. We went to the Heirloom Seed Conference where people are preserving non-GMO, non-hybrid seeds to keep our food security not in the hands of one corporation who controls the trademark on seeds. And all you have to do to find out is some great videos. And it's not just about what we're doing. We're also giving people on how you can look into doing legislation. How do you do lifestyle changes? How can I get involved? What kind of water filter should I use on my kitchen sink so when I get tap water, I know I'm not poisoning my family? How do I test that water? How do I get credible water testing? The age of counting on agencies and other people and governments to do the work, they're stressed, they're overburdened, and a lot of them are underfunded. So we really have to step up and take our individual responsibility. You can find all that information and all the links we're talking about, videos and such on waterprotectortour.org. www.thebrainfarm.org. And I want to thank Bob Saunders and Rachel Linden, who have been really instrumental organizers, and Michelle Eggers, who's been volunteering hundreds of hours to make the website happen. And she produces the Eugene Environmental Film Festival. So it's exciting. We're getting our water people together. And no matter what lifestyle you live, what your political affiliation is, this is about health. This is about all of us taking responsibility. We can't blame others anymore for the things that we're doing. And it's time for all of us to cure our own hypocrisy around our decisions and try to create the community and the life and the quality of life that we want. And I know, of course, Lotus Guide is extremely committed to that.
Yeah, I've always liked the word responsibility because it comes from responding to the environment with ability. And if we have the ability to respond, we're being responsible. And a lot of our ability lies in just getting educated, knowing what to do. Because people are lost right now. So they can get in touch with you through the website?
They can. waterprotectortour@gmail.com. Again, waterprotectortour.org. They can come out to some of our events. They can see films. And I do want to say, I'm not here today. I'm here as a friend and a neighbor, first and foremost. I'm here as a human being who is committed to awakening, and not only for myself, but to help benefit others. And I'm here as an interfaith minister, of someone who understands that we're all spiritually interconnected, whether you're a Buddhist, a Christian, a Muslim, a Jewish, a Jain, a Hindu, that spiritually we are all interconnected, regardless of what we look like or what language we speak or what we call the name of this great cohesive force in the universe. And I'm here as an event producer to bring my skill set to the forefront as a call to action for you to get involved, to do your part, whether in the privacy of your home or to come to an event or whatever it might be. And again, I thank you for your time to come out on a Friday evening and have this discussion. And
yeah, absolutely,
again, you and Dara are like some of my best friends and heroes, so I really appreciate and respect both of you.
That's reciprocated. Absolutely, Michael. Thank you for your time.